Hey, everybody, welcome to another edition of The Drop. Greg Wyshynski, Art O'Cal here with you every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your audio podcasts as well. The NHL on ESPN YouTube. Let me take a second, Wish. I am actually full of gratitude from this past weekend.
Okay.
Whether it's the show, whether it's how the playoffs have gone so far, it's been a lot of fun. So let me just address the audience for 1 second.
Sure.
To all of the people that are watching The Drop right now,
yeah,
I'm thanking you.
Ooh.
For knowing exactly what a pro wants, what a pro needs.
What a pro wants, what a pro needs. To keep me, you know, every year there is a commercial that does this to us. Remember Tara Tara, look at her go? Remember that one? Every year there's one of these, and this damn what a pro wants commercial, man. I put a tweet out about it, and everybody, I think, felt seen. That they weren't alone in this and having to see that commercial every 30 seconds, I think, every ad break.
Oh, absolutely. Every break, every single break of every sport for the rest of time.
Whenever I see those two guys walking down the stairs and, you know, dude's wearing his big old Matrix style leather jacket, I want to throw my gloves down like I'm Mitch Marner on the Leafs bench. I'm just very agitated.
We're going to get to that.
Yeah, we'll get there with Down Goes Round. By the way, just want to point out before I forget. If Nathan MacKinnon does what Mitch Marner does, they build a statue for the man. That's all I'm saying.
100%.
It's all perception. It's all, they both care. They just care in different ways. And also we respect the fact that one guy cares because he's Nathan MacKinnon. And we look at the other guy caring and he's like, oh, he's a peripheral player in the playoffs. And that's the difference. We'll get into it with
results,
Sean,
I guess. Later. Results. And yeah, we'll get to it with Down Goes Brown. Let's get to winners and losers of the weekend. And I guess we got to start in the Big Apple, right?
We should start in the Big Apple. My God, the New York Rangers. They made quick work of the Washington Capitals. They have to be our big winner for getting the old sweeperoo in the first round. Their special teams are off the charts right now. They're getting play out of almost every line. Panarin has atoned for his perceived lack of production last playoff by being just incredible. Trocheck's been maybe one of the best players in the playoffs so far. The Rangers are real, man. The Rangers are real, and they definitely have a path. I saw that the early odds would indicate that Carolina would be a favorite in that series if Carolina does advance past the Islanders. Let's not get ahead of ourselves there. But I don't know, man. The Rangers look like the team to beat. The loser for me, though, out of that series, Arda, is Alex Ovechkin. He's got to be. The only time in the history of his storied career that Alex Ovechkin did not garner a point in a series against an opponent. He put the blame on himself for their getting swept by the Rangers. He went 2 games in the series without a shot on goal. But I give credit to his coach, Spencer Carberry, who, by the way, did an amazing job as a first-year coach in this league, for, you know, not only explaining the struggles of Alex Ovechkin earlier in the series, but basically putting it out there after game four, look, this guy carried us to the playoffs. We're not here if not for Alex Ovechkin scoring, I think it was 13 goals in 17 games down the stretch, right? Mm-hmm. And so he's a loser, Alex, because he goes out in the first round in a sweep and doesn't have a point. But I'll caveat it by saying this. There's a lot of people that are questioning, is this the last time we'll see Ovechkin in the playoffs? We thought about that before the season the Caps made the playoffs. There's a lot of people saying he's cooked, right? This was the most ineffective playoff series we've ever seen the man have, and he's 38 years old. Well, the emphasis and spotlight will be on that and not on the 17 games that preceded it. And for me, it's the 17 games that preceded it that tell me that Ovi still has something to offer and is going to eventually track down Gretzky for this record.
And he still has something to chase in the regular season, and he'll be compelling until he gets to that mark. So
yeah.
Playoffs or not, whatever. And the other thing is, how old is he? 37? So he's 37 years old, and he had one bad playoff series. Okay. Like, this is not going to define him.
No.
It's not. So, okay, so be it. And you know what else I liked is he took it upon himself afterwards to say, no, this is on me. So he blamed himself when speaking to reporters afterwards. So
yeah.
I respect it. I have another loser for you, the Nashville Predators. Unfortunately for them, they've been through a whirlwind. And by the way, the Toronto Maple Leafs are looking at the Vancouver Canucks and saying, oh, that's how you make a comeback in the third period down 3-1. And they were, by the way, the Predators were playing a first-time goaltender. How many goaltenders have they played from the Canucks? 3 starting
yep.
goaltenders in this series? And they were up 3-1. They lose the lead with seconds to go. The Canucks tie it up, and then the Canucks win it in overtime. And like this series has been a very tight series. The Canucks have only averaged 18 shots a game in this entire series. They won a game with 12 shots in this series. And now they had a lead. The Predators had a lead. The Canucks came back, tied the game, forced it to overtime, won it in overtime. And now the Predators are left thinking, what went wrong? And remember, this was the popular pick for an upset coming into the postseason.
It was, yeah. So Colton Sissons obviously comes within a few inches of closing out that game with an empty net goal. There's a great shot of the Nashville bench celebrating what they think is going to be an empty netter. And then, like, there's one guy on the bench who still has his arms raised in disbelief as they skate back down the ice and the game continues. I think it's indicative of it being a young team. A lot of these guys are doing this playoff thing for the first time. And the Predators, one of the first lessons you learn in the playoffs, you ask any player, Arda, is how to manage your emotions when things go sideways or when adversity hits. And I mean, you tell me, man, when that game goes to overtime, did you think there was a prayer the Predators win that game? Because I didn't. Right,
absolutely.
Exactly.
Not a chance.
The winner for me, both in that Vancouver-Nashville game and also in the Stars-Knights series, one Wyatt Johnston and the other Brock Besser. Besser with the Hattie, the playoff Hattie in that game for the Vancouver Canucks, including the game-tying goal, powering the team, rallying the team. I mean, again, we've waited so long for Besser to be a healthy, happy boy in a full season, and to see him pull this off in the playoffs is great. And then Wyatt Johnston, man, opened the scoring, got the all-important first goal in that game three for the Dallas Stars, and then wins the thing with a beautiful snipe in overtime to give them a win they absolutely needed. You love to see players finding their stride and making a difference in the playoffs, and both those guys are my winners.
Winner, Mikhail Sergachev. Now, this is what I like about this situation. So just to catch everybody up, Mikhail Sergachev, we thought would be shut down for the remainder of the season, gruesome injury. He was back on the ice and he played. Okay, this was very surprising to many people. This was unforeseen. This was not reported. It just all of a sudden showed up. This is what I like about this situation. So we talked a lot about it on this show, about the whole cap circumventing, the LTIR trick, the Vegas Golden Knights doing it very well. But we always had a feeling that Mark Stone could possibly return for game one of the playoffs. And that was the running joke. Mm-hmm. John Cooper and the Tampa Bay Lightning took it one step further. They've done this already. They have this in the playbook. They did this with Kucherov a couple years ago. So they took it one step further. Now we're going to make you forget about our player. And we're just going to suddenly make a giant return as if it's John Cena returning at Madison Square Garden for the Royal Rumble. Yeah. Like, this is the level, the 200 IQ plays that the Tampa Bay Lightning are pulling from the playbook in the LTIR conversation. Right. I mean, look, I respect it.
Yeah. And obviously going down 3-0 to the Panthers was all part of the plan. We got him right where we want him. By the way, we helped Cooper launder this information. Like, Cooper came on the drop and said, we're not going to see Sergachev until like training camp. So we helped him amplify this lie that Sergachev wasn't going to come back for the playoffs. I mean, we've done our part, I suppose. Winner, loser for me, Connor Hellebuck. Winner, hey, buddy, congratulations. You're a Vezina Trophy finalist with Sergei Bobrovsky and Thatcher Demko, as announced on Monday. Great regular season, 60 games, 37-19-4, a .921 save percentage, a 2.39 goals against. You have earned yourself, probably, sir, the Vezina Trophy. And then the playoffs started, and he has an .870 save percentage. He's got a 5.22 goals against. He's got a negative 5.4 goals saved above expected, by far the worst in the playoffs for any goalie. Look, it. I recognize the fact that the Winnipeg Jets defense has been quite porous in front of Connor Hellebuck. He's faced a great shot volume. But again, when doesn't he face a great shot volume? It's kind of what his thing is in the regular season. I just think that when we talk about players in the playoffs, star players, difference makers, guys that make a difference in the series or win a game for their team when the chips are down, We like to think that Connor Hellebuck is one of those guys, but I got to be honest with you, man. You look around this league at the goalies that have thrived in the postseason during the glut of Hellebuck's career, and he's not been one of them. And I think he's been a major disappointment in this series. I think he's going to have a bright, shiny regular season trophy that will remind him of his postseason futility for the Winnipeg Jets.
Winnipeg Jets need wins in the postseason. Another team that does, the Toronto Maple Leafs, which leads us to this. Happy to have here on the drop Sean McIndoe, a.k.a. Down Grows Brown. You love him. You know him. He's a writer with The Athletic. He also wrote an awesome book about the history of the NHL, which I enjoyed very, very much. And if we were to write a chapter, Sean, of the current Toronto Maple Leafs in your History of the NHL book, you actually offered a very interesting theory. There's the book.
I got the book on my shelf behind me, Arda.
I listened to it.
One of the random books on the shelf behind me is Sean's very book there. So there you go.
It's so good. I highly recommend you check it out. I listened to it. You have it there, Wish. But the chapter that would be written about this Toronto Maple Leafs team, particularly in this series against the Boston Bruins, you had a very interesting theory that you wrote about on The Athletic. And that was, hey, maybe the Bruins are just better.
Yeah. Maybe the reason that this Leafs team keeps losing year after year after year is because they're just not as good as we keep saying they are. And as soon as I put that out there, okay, who's we? Who's this we that keeps saying the Leafs are so good? And look, obviously, the fan base is huge. The fan base is passionate. And yeah, they tend to overrate their own team. Of course they do. Welcome to pro sports, right? This is what fan bases do. And there's a huge media contingent in Toronto, and some of that plays into, yeah, maybe pumping this team up a little bit. But I do think some of this also comes from the other side, which is to say the fans who don't like the Leafs or you know, the media who kind of looks at it from a further back, because the story just works better. The story that we tell this time of year, these choke artists, these underachievers, that only works if they're a great team. If they're a so-so team, then the narrative doesn't play quite as well. So you need them to be a great team so that we can then ask why they're not doing great team things. But you look at this 8-year history now. Like, let's go back, right? The first year against Washington, they come in, they're wild card, they're huge underdogs. No one expects them to win that series, fine. They play the Bruins 2 years in a row, lose game 7 both years. Where were those game 7s? In Boston. Why are they in Boston? Boston was a better team. In regular season those years, is still a young Leafs team. So my question is it possible this team just isn't as good as we think it is? And the reason they keep losing is because they just keep running into teams that are a bit better, and yeah, we're getting the results that we should probably expect.
So this is an interesting thing, because when I read your theory, I thought it was fascinating, because it's actually just a different road to get to the same destination that a lot of the other people are driving to right now. A lot of the people that are like, this team is great, why can't they get past the first round or the second round? Why do these star players underachieve? The ones that overrate the team are driving down this way. And you're like, actually, team just ain't that good. They keep getting beat by these other teams. You're driving down this way. The destination for these two divergent roads is still, you've got to break up the core. You've got to change the core of this team, because what is here is not working. So I ask you, Sean, is it finally time to blow up the core of this team?
I mean, yes. And we could be having this conversation in 2021 and 2022 and 2023 as well. Because, there have been, let's just say, warning signs flashing on the dashboard for quite a while. I mean, in hindsight, if this series ends the way we think it's going to end, and the big changes finally come, which this year may go all the way to the top, could be Brandon Shanahan and all the way down. In hindsight, we will look back and say that Montreal series that we talked about, that should have been where the changes started. That should have been where you look at Sheldon Keefe, you look at the core and all of that. Easy maybe to say now, but a lot of people were saying it 3 years ago too. And certainly, I mean, even last year, I was looking back at a column I written around this time last year. And I say right in the column, well, I mean, as they're losing to Florida, I think they were down 3-0 when I wrote it. I said, well, the changes are coming. I mean, there's no way they can run it back. There's no way. And in fact, I even in a different column, I just casually mentioned, you know, whenever the new coach gets here next week, you know, I was just assumed. And of course, they didn't do it. And yeah, they moved on from Kyle Dubas. But even that, remember how that played out, right? Brandon Shanahan got up and said, hey, I spent all year thinking about it, and I decided I did want Kyle Dubas back. Yeah. And then there was a press conference, and somehow everything changed in a few days. But they were going to run it back. They have to change it this year. I mean, Sheldon Keefe, there's no possible way you bring him back. Possible way. That's despite the fact that he's got an extension that hasn't even kicked in yet, which
when I saw you tweet that, I was like, oh boy, this is the most Leafs thing that could happen right now.
And it's not, you know, because I had a bunch of people reply and they go, well, the Leafs got a ton of money. They're, you know, it's not going to say, and I'm not saying that's going to stop them from making the change. I'm just saying it's an insight into the decision making.
Yeah.
Especially like Brad Treliving comes in. He could just say, look, this guy wasn't my coach. I'm going to take a look at him for a year.
Look, it's an easy fix. You know who else has an extension that hasn't kicked in yet? Mike Sullivan. Keith and a third for Sullivan. Who says no, Sean?
Yeah.
Nice coach I mean, trade.
Probably not Kyle Dubas. So, I mean, there's a million ways you could do it. And I'm not even saying Sheldon Keefe's a bad coach.
He's a bad playoff coach.
He has not been able to get the message through to this group. No. They don't start on time. They don't keep their foot on the gas pedal. They can never seem to play a full 60 minutes. Now, is that a Sheldon Keefe issue? Yeah, it's the sort of thing we would typically point to a coach on. Maybe there's no coach that could get this group to actually play 7 strong games in a row. Maybe. Yeah. But we got to find out.
So
there's no way you can. I mean, if they bring Sheldon Keefe back, I can't even imagine what the reaction would be in Toronto.
So let's talk about that, because it feels like that's where we are, where maybe we talked about, oh, blowing up the core four, what does this team need? That moment when they were on the bench and all the sleuth lip readers are trying to figure out what Austin Matthews and William Nylander were saying, that to me speaks volumes to the current status of the team, where if it's true what William Nylander was saying there, hey, this isn't effing junior.
Yeah.
And how frustrated they all looked. To me, that's the biggest challenge of this team, is it not?
I mean, they should be frustrated. I will be honest, like putting on my fan hat, I would rather see that than what we usually see, which is just all of these 1,000-yard stares of guys just sitting at the bench, kind of slumped over, kind of, you know, not even half engaged. I don't mind seeing them yell at each other. The fact that, yeah, maybe they are turning on each other a little bit. I don't think that's a bad thing. This group has been so buddy-buddy, and they're always talking about how much they all love each other, and they all love it here, and this is just the greatest. Right up until it's time to sign a new contract, and then suddenly they need absolute top dollar to stay where they're going to stay. I don't know. I mean, how do you break up this core? Austin Matthews has got the long-term contract, and he's coming off
Matthews is not the problem.
He's not the problem. William Nylander got that ridiculous contract just a few months ago, so I mean, he's locked in. John Tavares has got 1 year left on the deal. Yeah. So all the arrows are pointing to Mitch Marner right now, and that's going to be a fascinating situation, because he's got 1 year left on the deal. In theory, he's ready to sign the extension on July 1st. Has a no movement clause, so it's not like they can just ship him out anywhere they want, but he certainly has become the lightning rod right now. And you see it in Toronto and outside, you know, Paul Bissonnette going off on him, Rosehill going off on him. I mean, he's Kelly Rudy on Hockey Night in Canada, after defending him for a couple of games in the series. It just seems like that's where the frustration is. And some of it is because I think the fan base just intuitively understands that he'd be the guy who would have to go. You know, there's no point screaming at Austin Matthews. He's around for the next 5 years. How do you do it? How do you manage that? What happens if Mitch Marner says, I'm not going anywhere? And by the way, here's the $100 million extension I'm demanding. I don't know. I don't know how you deal with it.
There are ways around a no move clause, but I think my final point on this is that you're your rant about Boston being better than Toronto, I think speaks to the inherent need to break up the core, because Marner's 26.
Yeah.
Like, this is who he is. He's not going to all of a sudden morph into Marchand at some point. He's not Morgan Rielly is 30. This is who he is. He's not going to all of a sudden become Charlie McAvoy overnight. This is who they are. And so there's no maybe next year with these guys that are Tigers that aren't going to change their stripes. Mm-hmm. So either you have to make the moves here to bring in the players that will get Matthews and Nylander, who I agree are the keepers, over the top, or you just keep making the same damn mistakes over and over again. That's my problem. My problem with Marner is not the glove throwing and all the other nonsense. My problem with Marner is that I don't think you can necessarily win with him being your third most important player. And I think that's really the inherent issue right now with Marner.
Yeah.
He's a brilliant offensive player. He's never going to be different than what he is now.
And he's certainly not a guy. You're right. He's 26. This core is, they're not old, but they're no longer at the point where you say, hey, it's all about the experience. They're learning. They're going through it for the first time. They've been through it enough times at this point.
Right.
You know, I guess I push back on Mitch Marner's not going to change. We've seen guys change in the NHL. We've seen guys get into their 30s and finally the light goes off and finally it clicks. And that could absolutely happen to Mitch Marner somewhere else. GMs love to tell us, hey, I'm not going to make a change for the sake of making a change. And it's usually nonsense, because usually that's not what anyone's asking to do. People, you know, the fan base is saying, no, we want you to make a change to make the team better.
Right.
But sometimes maybe you do need a change for the sake of a change, just to say to the group, this isn't good enough. Like, really, I mean, last year, everybody, you know, people like me writing all these whiny columns, oh, it's not good enough. But if you're a member of that core, what evidence do you have that anybody in this organization actually doesn't think it's good enough? The coach keeps coming back. Coach got an extension out of all of this. So yeah, maybe you do have to just take somebody and say, we're going to make a move for the sake of making a move, if only to wake you guys up. And yeah, if you guys really are such a tight-knit group and you love each other as much as you say, hey, maybe we got to break that up, just to send that message that it just isn't good enough. Because for all the things that they say, all the times they try to tell us what we want to hear, they sure seem like a group that thinks this actually is good enough.
Mm-hmm. This has been great, Sean. Always appreciate your insight into hockey and joining us here on The Drop. The only thing that was missing for me listening to both of you talk was a bowl of soup. I'll make sure to prepare that next time. To be properly prepared.
And a hipster from Boston telling us we're both wrong. I mean, that's also
right.
What's missing.
Yeah, that would have been all right.
Sean, before we let you go, you have a lot of smart hockey articles on The Athletic. What are you working on next?
Yeah, you can find that, all my stuff at The Athletic. I've got a few things coming this week. Going to look at the stages of a playoff controversy, going to look at some of the narratives that we could see in the Stanley Cup final. That post just went up, and there'll be some Leaf stakes.
All right.
Let's just say one way or another. I'm certainly not going to act like I'm already planning out what's going to happen after game five.
No, not you.
I'm already working on the comeback of the ages story after that'll run after game seven, I'm sure.
All yeah. Right. Nice. Down goes Brown joining us on The Drop. Thanks, man.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks again to Down Goes Brown for joining us here on The Drop. We are helping Utah NHL team / NBA's Utah Jazz owner Ryan Smith out. He said, I'm going to leave it to a fan bracket to decide the name of the Utah hockey franchise that will begin next season. But we said, let's just do it early. We have the rumored, alleged 8 names, and we put them to a bracket. We are in the semifinal. Round number one side of the bracket for the semifinal, the Mammoth versus the Yetis. The Yetis won by a 56% vote. Very close.
Oh, I was going to go do voiceovers for the Stanley Cup playoffs. Hey, Mammoth, remember me? I was an Ice Age. I was a Mammoth.
I love Mammoth. I've come to realize, by the way, Artis, and this might be actually a good result for Utah, because I've come to realize that there is a pro lacrosse team called the Mammoth that play in Colorado, which obviously, you know, Denver is going to be a huge rival of Salt Lake City. So maybe for the best that they don't have to get into the weird Bill Foley, I want to name my team the name of the Army team kind of litigation stuff. But yeah, Yetis wins. And again, we have looked it up, folks. The plural of Yeti is in fact Yetis.
Yes, it is. In the other semifinal matchup, the Blizzard taking on the Outlaws. The Outlaws won by a slimmer margin, 54%. I think this was the right vote. I think this was the right choice. So now wish we have Outlaws and Yetis in the final.
Yeah, you think it's the right choice because you're old like me. And Outlaws are cool. And we're thinking about like old gunslingers like Gene Hackman and Unforgiven.
John Wayne. Such.
Blizzard was now. Blizzard is today. Blizzard is Gen Z. They're the Blizzy. They're the Zards.
The
They're
Blizzy?
The Blizz. They are. That name would have been so cool and offered so much cool cultural cachet to this new team. It is a shame to see Blizzard punted in favor of Outlaws. But you're right. Now we've got Yetis versus Outlaws. Mythical creatures that traverse the mountains versus scurrilous thieves who rampage through towns and take over saloons.
Wishes out on Yetizzy versus the Outlizzy. You're not into that whatsoever. We're going to put a vote... Terrible. Absolutely terrible. We're going to put a vote very soon. We're going to reveal the winner on Thursday, and then we will present it to one Ryan Smith on a silver platter. The work has been done. We did it for you. So congratulations. Just go to your marketing department and have them do the mock-ups, find a mascot, because you have a name. You will have a name by Thursday's episode. Okay, so we have a good body of work here. Let's go back to the playoffs now, Wish. We are underway. We already have one team going to the second round, the New York Rangers. We'll have many, many more in the days to come. So let's update the Stanley Cup contender power rankings.
Oh, okay.
All the teams from all the way down to number one. If we were to rank them based on their play in the postseason this year, how should we go? I guess we go top to 15
to 1. Yeah, and this is also
one.
Like ability to win a cup. So obviously the current circumstances for these series play into it as well. So I originally had the Winnipeg Jets at 15.
Mm-hmm.
You believe that the Leafs should be 15. Why?
Because it's more disappointing. Because if not for an Austin Matthews heroic breakaway goal in game two, they would be down 3-0 in the series. They would be at risk of being swept. The Jets at least had a barn burner of a game one where they earned that victory. And the Leafs have just, for many parts of this series, looked completely lifeless and out of control. So right. For me, I put them at the bottom.
Take it under advisory. So we'll go 15 Leafs, 14 Jets. Number 13, I think it's the Los Angeles Kings. They obviously played a very competitive game four against the Oilers and won a game in that series. But honestly, like if you're looking at the teams that are behind them and ahead of them, I think that 13th overall is right where they need to be.
The one thing I would say is maybe the Capitals should go 16 just because they got swept, right?
Well, so we're not even going to factor them in. They're not
They're completely out of it. Okay, yeah. So these are only remaining teams. Got it. Okay. So then the Leafs are 15. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Then come at 12, the Islanders. Now, the Islanders are a fun little interesting story here because I think they've been competitive in this series in almost every game. In every game. If it's not for a mental lapse in game two, blowing that 3-0 lead, maybe they are in a much different position in the series than they would be if it wasn't for the baffling choice of Patrick Waugh to start Ilya Sorokin in game three. Maybe they're in a different circumstance in the series. So I'm not counting them quite out yet against the Carolina Hurricanes. I think the Hurricanes would be smart to end this thing quickly. So I have them at 12. 11's Nashville. I think Nashville overall has played better than the Islanders. I think that they clearly have shown an acumen for blocking shots and all the other things. But again, you know, the young team syndrome we talked about before really played into them being where they are in that series. 10, the Lightning, another team that all of a sudden their circumstance changes. They get Sergachev back. They look like they're ready to lift the cup. But still, though, they've on the whole been outplayed in that series by Florida. Number 9, the Carolina Hurricanes. Why so low? Because I have not quite seen them hit their stride yet. I don't think that they quite have their depth working as well as it should be. And right now, the Brent Pesce injury on their blue line has me worried about their circumstance beyond this series. Number eight, the Vancouver Canucks, Arda. Their best players have been their best players outside of Elias Pettersson and an injured Thatcher Demko in this series. I give credit to Quinn Hughes for not falling apart on the ice, having his limbs literally fall off on the ice with the way he's been manhandled in this series by the by the Predators. But I think the Canucks have shown again under Rick Tocchet that they can play well as a team and keep this thing cohesive. And
quickly for the Canucks, it's impressive that for the amount of goaltenders that they've started in this series, they're ahead of the Hurricanes, who people would have had much higher. But I agree with everything you're saying.
Yeah.
It's just interesting that this is the situation we're in.
Number seven, Dallas Stars. I struggle to figure out where to put them because they are down in their series. We know based on the regular season, they should probably be number two or three on this list. And we know that they probably lose game one because of Ottinger, who I thought had a better game three. I still can't put him any higher than this because of the team they're playing and because they just, you know, they're still scratching and clawing to try to win games in the series. So I'll have them at seven. Do you like Boston at six, or you have them higher or lower, Arda, Boston?
Compared to the rest of the field, I think that six is a fair placement for the Bruins.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been... They've been dominant in stretches. They've been great in stretches. They've been keeping the Leafs to the outside. The Leafs just haven't been able to create any offensive pressure against the Bruins. They had one really good period in that last game, the third period. They were all over the Bruins, but it was too little too late, and they just didn't have what it took to get back into that game. But you're going to get into the top five here, so I think their placement is actually pretty fair for the reasons why the other teams are stronger.
Yeah. Vegas looked like a steamroller in games one and two. They played well in game three, but not as well. So that kind of keeps them from getting any higher than five. Logan Thompson, by the way, my God, like,
right? Like blessing the second of riches straight for this year? Team. Come yeah. on, Vegas.
I know. He was outstanding in that game. Number four, the Florida Panthers, who I think pound for pound are probably the best team in the East. You know, an absolute train wreck of a game four for them with the momentum of Sergachev coming back for the Lightning. We'll see what happens in this next game, but I still think that they're a higher quality of team than almost every team in the East. The Colorado Avalanche are three for me. Again, it's hard to really gauge how good the Avs are when they are playing a Jets team that's kind of coming apart at the seams. Not only their goaltender playing poorly, but you know, the Brendan Dillon injury and their defense being as completely porous as it's been. It's hard to really gauge how good the Avs are, but they look great. Number two is the Oilers. And number two of the Oilers for me, Arda, because not only are we seeing them do Oilers things in the playoffs with the Leon and Connor show on the power play in particular, but a 1-0 Stu Skinner shutout in game four to give them a 3-1 lead in that series. Are we seeing the maturation of a defensive juggernaut in Edmonton? Is that what we're actually seeing, Arda, finally?
They had an incredible game. And it was one of those games where you're like, oh, they have other tools in the toolbox. They have other tricks up their sleeve. That made it seem very scary for all opponents, not just the LA Kings, because the Kings were pressing for a lot of that game and the Oilers held them at bay. I think the Oilers only had I'm just going to look this up real quick. I think they only had 15 or 16 shots in this game.
Yep.
Like it was pretty low. They only had 13 shots, and they won 1-0. And the Kings had 33. That to me is an impressive playoff victory. And that's the kind of game where you're like, okay, I now have built more faith in Stuart Skinner as a goaltender. That might have been a question mark coming into the playoffs. And the defensive prowess of the team, that builds confidence. And you already, like you said, already had the confidence in the offensive wherewithal and the Connor Dreisaitl show. So to me, they might even be flirting with number one, if not for what the Rangers were able to do against the Capitals.
Yeah, that's the thing for me, really, is what the Rangers did against the Capitals. They have to be number one. They look great. Their special teams, we mentioned, are clicking like crazy. They're just great. And what makes them scary is you can see where all the pieces fit right now for them, lineup wise. They've got everybody kind of clicking well. The lines seem to make sense. Laviolette's coaching them well. And again, I think the East sets up pretty good for them right now. Will we see Matt Rempe in the next round? I don't know. Philip Hedel's on his way back. All the Ranger fans seem to believe that Hedel's going to take Rempe's place in the lineup, but it is undeniable. I think this team is was it 17-2-1 or something with Matt Rempe in the lineup? I know we always get grief whenever we bring up this guy. Why are you talking about Matt Rempe so much? I mean, the
because he's a superstar and people are talking about him, and we'll he's polarizing, and actually he's carrying his weight on the ice with the limited minutes that he's getting. That's why we're talking about
him. And also they've been
and the like Empire State Building is tweeting about him.
The best team in hockey since he started playing for them. So I don't exactly know what to tell you. Yeah, the Rangers are one, and it is going to take a very big effort to try to knock them off track in the Eastern Conference playoffs. If I was going to say Arda, you know, I would pick them in a series against Carolina personally. I think right now
I would.
For me, the only team that I think can knock them off is Florida, if I'm being honest.
Well, we'll have to wait and see how the playoffs shake down. That is our up to the second power rankings of the Stanley Cup playoff contending teams. One last stat for you. The following franchises have never played an NHL game in the month of June. The Seattle Kraken, the Minnesota Wild, the Columbus Blue Jackets, the Arizona Coyotes, may they rest in peace, yeah, and the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Just wanted to, look, I'm just stating the facts.
Yeah.
That's all I'm doing.
That's a sad state of affairs, my friend.
Yeah. Thank you very much for watching or listening. Remember, every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your audio podcasts, as well as the NHL on ESPN YouTube, Thursday, a special episode. For the third straight year, we will be presenting to you one of our favorite bits, one of our favorite segments on the show, NHL playoff teams as Star Wars characters in honor of May the 4th, which is this week. I cannot wait. We have a spreadsheet going, Wish. The ideas are flowing, and I'm super pumped for this might be our best edition yet. It probably will be.
I know. I got to find out what costume I'm wearing now. I just realized, geez.
Oh, pressure. Yeah. So you were Chewbacca 1 year.
Chewbacca.
Yeah.
There's a very good chance I might be Chewbacca again. I don't know. We'll see.
Another Chewbacca reappearance. All right. Thanks for watching, everybody, and look forward to Thursday's episode.
Take care.